B-Pod Studios.
There's such heavy times, we need a little relief. And that's why we have called on our next guest, who has now become the official stand-up national comedian of the Mike Messinelli Show. You've seen her on Roast. You've seen her on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. She's got a daily podcast called You Up with Nikki Glaser. She's been on Dancing with the Stars, Real Times with Bill Maher. She's the great Nikki Glaser. Nikki!
Hello!
How's it going? Please lighten up the mood for us. We need you today.
Oh my gosh, I'm so depressed today. This is not the day for me to... I'm calling you guys to lighten my mood.
All right, tell us what's going on. First of all, this is now 4 months of you living in your childhood bedroom.
Yeah, thank you for that reminder. It is 4 months. I cannot believe it's been this long. I thought I was just coming back here for, you know, a short stay while... you know, the country straightened itself out, and then I would be back to New York. But I just subleased my apartment in New York and moving all of my stuff out of the city. And, and I'm moving to St. Louis for the time being. But I'm really just crashing at my parents'. It's pretty nice here. And I don't know. I don't know what my life is. I used to, like, be someone, and now I'm podcasting out of my dad's den. And I haven't done stand-up for, you know, I did stand-up last week for the first time, but it felt like it was the first time on stage ever. It's a wild time.
Where did you do stand-up? You traveled?
No, actually, there's a club in St. Louis down the road at a mall, which I never had to work the club because they couldn't afford me since they've been open. And then suddenly now they can't because there's no work to be had. So I was the one that called them this time. Before they were asking me, and I'm like, guys, I can't. You know, I'd love to, but you know, I'm gotta pay a price. And now I'm like, I'll pay you to go on stage. So they Venmo'd me my check, and I was performing in a mall that I used to shoplift from in high school.
So were there how many people were there? What was the crowd like? How's that feel?
So usually the club holds about 275 people, and they capped it off at 125. So there were tables, you know, 6 feet apart, and you had to go with a group of people. You couldn't just go alone. You had to go with people that you were already, like, hanging out with, I guess. And then you get your temperature taken on the way in, and then you sit at a table. And on stage, they had electrical tape kind of keeping me in a box so that I don't get within six feet of any audience members. And then I just did my act as best I could remember. And it was fun, but it was not the way I like to do comedy. You know, comedy is best done in a crowded, packed, low-ceilinged environment. So all of the rules now that we have to abide by actually are not conducive to stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, because atmosphere is so much in a situation like that. Did you feel that? Obviously,
you know, I felt like people were in good spirits, and I didn't feel like anyone felt, you know, like they were putting themselves in danger. There wasn't like an anxiety in the room of any sort. It was weird though, you know, seeing people so spread out. It looked like everyone just had tiny restraining orders against each other, and you know, it was hard to just talk about the things I was talking about before all of this happened.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, it was adapting every single joke to this new world and also trying to have new material, which, you know, as a stand-up comedian, I think a lot of people think we just get up there and just are funny, but it's a lot of crafting and doing a joke hundreds of times before you find the right wording to actually bring it to a stage in front of people that pay to see it. You know, that's why I moved to New York City, was because I was getting on stage every night at local clubs, being able to work out material. There wasn't a night that went by that I didn't work. I was a workaholic when it came to this stuff. So to go on stage and perform for people who were paying a lot of money for a ticket and to try new material for the first time in front of them, it was not easy. And I tried my best, but, you know, I'm just still getting used to this, to doing stand-up again. I've never taken off more than a week in 17 years of doing this professionally. So 3.5 months was just a
crazy
lifetime.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're talking Nikki Glaser. Now, on that note, does this sharpen your writing, or does it, like, this has, will this change the landscape for comedy altogether because of the heaviness of what's going on? And is your writing going to have to be different? And this is for, I guess, all stand-ups. This is a new world that you're in. So must you factor that in? And how has that affected your writing?
I do think that these are, you know, touchier times to be talking about anything. It's funny because anything that you want to talk about that is of the moment feels too soon. And anything that is not of the moment feels too trivial and frivolous. So you're really stuck in this weird space of what is okay to talk about, because we don't want to talk about death and the tragedy of what's happening, and you also don't want to deny it because it seems like this is all, it's the air we breathe now, literally, is that's all we're thinking about every time you turn on the TV. That's is all anyone's talking about. So to do comedy and talk about my relationships and guys not texting me back just feels so stupid and silly to talk about. But the writing aspect, I'm not someone who writes off stage. I don't sit down with a notebook and, and think about, what do I want to talk about? I just kind of get up there and riff, and yeah, things come to me and I jot them in my phone, but my writing happens on stage. So I'm actually having to approach my writing style differently because stage time is just not something that exists anymore to be had.
Yeah. A couple things have happened. D.L. Hughley collapsed and tested for COVID-19. Did you see that? And, also some comedian, I just saw Chris D'Elia got into some trouble for texting underage girls. Hey, you pay attention to all the stuff that's going on in your industry?
Of course. Now all comedians are actually there's something that's bringing us all together now. We're all calling each other again and reconnecting just to talk about everything that's happening. It's crazy. I thought that with everything that's happened, no one would get canceled anymore. I was like, oh my God, there's nothing. Everyone's been canceled, essentially. Everyone's missed out on work. Nothing is the same in anyone's career. And so I thought, how can anyone get canceled anymore? And then it's very apparent that that's still a thing that can happen. Maybe even more so. People are just bored and looking for stuff. Not that it's not justified. I don't really know the details, but boy, is it fun to gossip with other comedians and send each other tweets and articles. And it's really brought us together when one of us goes down. I hate to say it, but we all are talking amongst ourselves.
What about Chappelle's special? Did you see Chappelle's special?
I haven't watched it yet. I was just not ready to watch. I live with my parents, so I'm kind of like going off of what they want to watch every night. And I hate to say that I haven't seen it, but it was just when it came out, I was watching a lot of things that were very heavy, and I didn't watch. Did you watch it yet?
I actually haven't seen it yet, but I've seen such great reviews on it. So
that's on my
wish list.
Also. No wrong.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
He's great. Sorry, my dog is barking and my dad is walking in the door.
Let me ask you about your family life, because your dad, I saw the Instagram thing where you and your dad went to a nursing home, and your dad is a pretty good guitar player, and you're there dancing with him. What was that? Was that somebody you knew in there, or you just...
My dad plays guitar and sings around at local bars and performs at nursing homes. Regularly when this kind of thing isn't happening. And so there was a nursing home that he regularly plays at, and they said, you know, you can't come inside, but we can maybe do a thing where you go from window to window. So it was kind of their idea, and then he was like, yeah, I'm down. So we just went out there, and I wanted to see it happen. You know, I wanted to see what this would be like. I was just looking for, like, a a reason to get out of the house, and I love watching my dad perform, and so I just went and supported him as he played for these people that have been, like, locked in and not able to have any visitors whatsoever besides their nurses, and it was really lovely and so sweet.
Your dad looks like a hoot. And plus, you're like St. Louis royalty. I saw an interview, like a news anchor did an interview. Like, you're the favorite daughter of St. Louis.
Yeah, it's almost come to that. I don't feel like any kind of celebrity here whatsoever. I have really reverted back to being a teenager again and feeling like a real nobody. And I think it's good for me to be humbled a little bit, but there is no special treatment in this town. I mean, I'm sure, I think, you know, people came out to shows last week and I was able to sell out 3 shows. Sell out meaning, like, you know, it's half capacity, so it's not that hard to sell out. But I did feel the love from St. Louis, but I don't feel, you know, I go to the grocery store here, no one recognizes me. Maybe it's because I'm wearing a mask and sunglasses. I run down the street, I don't get recognized. I don't feel like this, you know, a Garden State moment where it's like, oh, this famous person moves back home, as much as I would like to feel that way. Although, you know, someone came to the show last week, and I'm driving a brand new Mercedes now because they're like, we just wanted to loan you a car. And so I'm just driving a free
Mercedes.
It's
an awesome choice, by the way.
For as long as I want. So there are definite perks. But, you know, they're not, like, giving me the keys to the arch.
Okay. All right. Now, let me go into a couple of personal things. We're talking to Nikki Glaser. So, first of all, you're great on the roasts. I'm curious to know how you get on those roasts, A. But the one roast I wanted to talk about, I guess, was the Alec Baldwin roast. Because I read that Blake Griffin, that you weren't, like, you were kind of hurt by the comments that Blake Griffin made.
Yeah. I mean, I get hurt every single roast. They reveal some kind of characteristic about yourself that you didn't even know existed, or you didn't know other people noticed, which is, like, the hardest thing. You know, if you're fat, you know you're fat. If you're ugly, you know you're ugly. But then sometimes they pick something that's just like, oh, God, I thought it was just me who saw that, you know? And so Blake Griffin said that I looked like Larry Bird in one of his jokes, and that really hurt my feelings just because that's just not anything you ever want to...
First of all, it's the most ridiculous comment I've ever heard, that you look like Larry Bird. But, like, I'm sure
Well, the way the audience laughed at it, Mike, you would have thought there are certain jokes that the audience laughs at where you just go, ouch, man, they really felt that, or that really resonated. And that's the hurtful part, not the joke, it's the audience... laughing afterwards, and you go, wow, that there's some truth to that. And I watched The Last Dance. I became obsessed with that documentary during this quarantine. And every time Larry Bird came on screen, I kind of had to look away. I was just like, this is too real for me. And I do, without makeup, I did see myself in
The people that saw that roast, you had the tight dress on, you had the hair pulled back, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I heard that, I go, somebody must have wrote that for him, you know, trying to be, like, do you actually think that came from him?
No, I think it was written for him, but he said it and had to think he had to agree with it in some way to say
it. Yeah, he was trying to be snarky. His whole presentation was kind of snarky.
That's the objective of the roast. You have to go for the jugular. You've gotta just make everyone feel as bad as they can. I know that because I write roast jokes. So I don't take anything it personally, but that doesn't mean that my feelings don't get hurt.
I got you. I wonder how stoic people can stay through those roasts. The other thing I want to talk about, this Bobby Bones thing. First of all, I don't even know who that is, but apparently people know who he is. And he was on Dancing with the Stars when you were on Dancing with the Stars. And you had, like, a couple-week dating situation?
Because
you got eliminated early, and then you say he ghosted you.
Right. Well, what happened was, you know, we were on this reality show and the stakes were high and you're just immersed in this world. You're not really talking to anyone else. So we became friends because we were the two worst dancers on the show. Or, you know, going into it, we were the worst. He ended up winning the show, not because he's a good dancer, but because he, you know, is a very likable person, has a lot of fans. And I'll argue to the death that he's not a good dancer and never has been and never will be. but he did win the show. And I have to give him so much credit for that. It is amazing. But we started out just being like, oh, no, what are we going to do? And we became friends just from, being thrown into this world that we were terrified of and had to dance live on TV. We were both never had done anything like this before. And so you just become close with certain people on the show, and we struck up a friendship. We kind of started casually dating on the show, and then, you know, after I was kicked off, we kept in touch. But then eventually he kind of just faded away. I would say he ghosted. I think he denies that, but, you know, when you're talking to someone on the phone a lot and then they just stop answering texts, and I'm not someone who keeps texting after they stop answering. You know, I'm not someone who, I can take a hint.
Yeah.
When I say I was ghosted, it wasn't like me like, hello, are you there? When are we going to hang out again? Can we talk on the phone tonight? It was like, you know, you just get one word answers and then you kind of go, hey, this guy isn't into me anymore. So and when I say I was ghosted, that's what I mean.
All right. But, like, but you're more famous than Bobby Bones.
That's not true. It's
really?
You don't know who he is, but it's
all right.
People do. It's crazy.
Okay.
I think to some people I'm more famous, but to most people he is more famous.
Okay.
And
Nikki, yeah. we're gonna play a roast of you. We have a clip of the last one. Is this the Baldwin roast?
No,
it's not. All right, this is where you were on the. What other roast was?
This was one when David Spade was the host.
Okay, that was the roast of Rob Lowe.
Oh, that Rob Lowe, that was also funny. All right, so here's Nikki Glaser on the roast of Rob Lowe.
David Spade, the host with the most step stools in your apartment. David, you seriously influenced so many female comics' haircuts. Tonight, Jeff is dressed as Prince. The Prince of Wales, the animal, you're fat. Jeff, if you change your name to a symbol, it'd be the Arby's logo. Jeff. No, Jeff, I'll admit, I've imagined Jeff without clothes. It's how I stay thin. Rob Riggle, I want to thank you so much for fighting the war against terrorism and subtlety.
Rob Riggle, too.
Jimmy A. Carr is what Ralph Macchio has to do to find a place to sleep every night.
That's awesome. First of all, I want to have a Spade got demolished for his height. So, if anybody would feel slighted, it would be him, right?
Yeah, I mean, but God slighted him first. Right? he definitely, I remember talking to him afterwards. I barely knew him, and now he's a pretty good friend. But at the time, I barely knew him, and I remember him feeling really kind of sad afterwards, being like, yikes, that hurt. Not from me, just from everyone.
Oh, well.
We all felt that way. It's so funny to hear that because I'm cringing listening to myself. I mean, honestly, if I ever call the show again, please never play my
why are you cringing?
I cannot. I don't listen to myself.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I don't watch. We're on TV, too, and I can't watch me either. So I understand what that is. It's weird.
It's something weird.
It's an insecurity.
I sound like such a baby. I found 1,000 things wrong with my delivery. It's nice to look back and be like, wow, I've changed since then, because I really thought I was the best then. But man, was I. That was like my freshman year of roasting.
But you're funny. Sorry. So let me close with this, because I don't know where it takes you. I know you had this show in development with what was the show you had? It was, I don't know if it stopped or not. It was like Werner was involved in it. It's called Canceled. It's for Quibi. Is that still going on?
Well, I'm writing it currently. So you know how TV works. It's like you write it and then you have to get it approved. And the show wouldn't be on for at least another year and a half.
Okay.
The way TV moves and the fact that you can't shoot TV right now. But I am currently writing a show about if I got canceled and had to move back home with my parents in St. Louis. And I filmed the show a year ago, so I had no idea that would actually be my life.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, you move back in with your parents to weather the storm because of the questionable set at the Comedy Store goes viral and your career implodes. So that's the premise of the show, and it'll be on Quibi. So we'll look forward to that. And also, I know some comedians have traveled to areas that they think are safe. Are you traveling? And when do you think the next time you will travel?
Well, I know the next time because I just booked my tickets today. And I thought tickets were cheap. They are not. I'm going to Salt Lake City next weekend, actually, to do shows at a club there that has a huge room and they're really spacing it out. And then I'm doing Nashville after that. That's where D.L. Hughley collapsed.
Uh-huh.
I think I scrubbed that place out before then just because he has COVID. But, every club is taking more precautionary measures now that happened. I don't know if it's the right thing to do. I just know that if, clubs are open and the state says it's okay, I'm just going to trust that and I'm going
to... Yeah, I heard that Tom Papa say that he went to Salt Lake. That must be a place where you guys feel safe. So, listen, good luck with all that stuff. I know it might be a while before you come to Philadelphia.
God, I hope not. I love it there.
All right. Well, you know, if you stop in, we're going to dinner.
I know, Mike.
Okay.
I know.
All right. I just want to remind you.
I look forward to it.
Okay, sounds good. I'm holding you to it. You take care, and tell Papa I said hello.
I will.
All right, take care, Nikki.
Bye-bye.
All right, there she is. Nikki Glaser.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.